Okay, so you get the idea. Make a mistake and you're fired. Now, okay, clearly that's supposedly entertainment. I guess it is kind of funny. Maybe not so much for the people who are fired. And it's slightly a caricature of the way the world is, that if we mess up, we're fired. Now, okay, there aren't many jobs where if you make a little mistake, you get fired. But if you make enough mistakes, or a big enough mistake in some jobs, you will be fired. Well, you should be fired, you know, if it's unsafe. But, you know, for the rest of us in the rest of life, we can still get that impression that we don't measure up because we don't quite meet the standard. Now, the effects aren't as dramatic as that, but they're cumulative over the whole of a life that we keep messing up. And, okay, this is what Lord Sugar said to some of his protégés, apprentices, or maybe disciples. They want to follow him. That's what they were doing. So we're going to look at how Peter, who is one of Jesus' disciples or one of Jesus' apprentices, what happened to him when he messed up? Was he fired? Now, obviously, you kind of know the answer. But as we look at that, remember that the way Jesus treats people really matters to us. It matters to them at the time, and it matters to us now. So here's one example where the disciples, and this is collectively all the disciples here, Jesus has been teaching them, this is after the feeding of the 4,000, and Jesus says to them, be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees. So they discussed this among themselves, and they didn't understand. So this is all the disciples, but if you go to the chapter before, it's almost the same, but it explicitly says, Peter didn't understand. And then Jesus says to them, do you still not understand? You know, they're just all a little bit slow. Don't you remember? And Jesus continues, don't you remember the 5 loaves and 2 fish and the baskets you gathered or the 7 loaves, etc., etc.? He's explaining again what they should have got. And then the orange bit, then they understood. So all the disciples in this chapter and in the preceding chapter, Peter explicitly, are just a little bit slow. They don't get it. Spiritually a bit, you know, bit lacking. Now, you might say that's not a monumental failure. Yeah, okay, they didn't understand, so they needed it explaining again. And Jesus explains, and then they understand, so everything's fine. And that may be true for us. You know, we think, you know, we've been in church forever, and do we really understand, or is it all a bit odd? Well, okay, Jesus will explain again. He's patient. But here, chapter 15, the chapter before Peter messes it up, here he's in with lunching with the disciples, not understanding. And again in chapter 17, which I'm not going to touch on, he messes up again. So 3 consecutive chapters, Peter is kind of, well, Alan Sugar would have fired him, probably, or at least put him on notice. So another example. This is the transfiguration. So Jesus has selected 3 of the disciples to go up a mountain with him to have where Jesus meets with Elijah and Moses, and God speaks out of the cloud. So a pretty awesome experience. And you know, we're not going to discuss the detail of what that means and what the importance is, but Peter puts his foot in his mouth here. He's overwhelmed. And having seen this amazing vision and appearance of these ancient prophets, he says in orange, Peter says to Jesus, Rabbi, it's good for us to be here. Yeah, no kidding. Let's put up 3 shelters, 1 for each of you, so you can stay here. You know, he hasn't got an idea what he should be doing. And the gospel writer here, Mark, says he didn't know what to say because they were so afraid. Okay, so he's frightened, afraid, and he just opens his mouth and blurts out something which is pretty dumb. Okay, not a smart move. So, kind of enthusiastic maybe, but bull in China shop, opens mouth, foot right in. Not a good idea. So Peter's life, as we scamper through some of the occurrences in the gospel, he doesn't get it wrong all the time. And there's an example here where Jesus asks the question, who am I? Who do people say that I am? And Peter replies, and I've highlighted it in orange, he says, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And that's not getting the answer wrong. But, well, it's still good, so it's not really a very big but. Jesus says to him, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. So Peter comes out with the right answer, but that's revealed to him by God. Now that doesn't detract from the fact that he was able to hear from God and speak God's words. You know, the revelation, you know, took root, and he said that amazing phrase that Jesus was the Messiah. So that's a good thing. That's very encouraging. And there's this same little section has an amazing promise in it. So Jesus says to Peter, and I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church. So Peter and rock is the same word in Greek, or nearly, I hope. Someone will not correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's about right. Peter and rock are the same. So upon this rock I will build my church. So Jesus is giving him an amazing promise that he will build his church. And we'll come back to that explicitly. However, this little section we've scampered through is followed immediately by this section in Matthew 16. So Jesus begins to predict his death. So from that time on, Jesus begins to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hand of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Okay, so this is a dramatic change of tone. Jesus has just said, you know, who am I? And Peter says, you're the Messiah. This is amazing. So if you're the Messiah, what's this business about suffering, being killed, and then this mysterious raise to life? What is all that about? And Peter obviously is pretty adamant that this is a bad idea. And you know, you're probably familiar with this. But he says, never, Lord. This will never happen to you. So that's interesting just grammatically. Never, Lord. How can you say that? Because Lord means you're in charge, I will do what you say. And then never means how could, that's not going to happen. Well, yeah, it doesn't work. But Peter is clearly, you know, shocked and, you know, wants to stop this suffering and being killed happening to Jesus because he cares for Jesus. So, and the Messiah shouldn't suffer and die. So he says, never, Lord, that won't happen to you. So this is in the same chapter. Peter has had this amazing revelation where he says Jesus is the Messiah. And then in the next breath almost, he's telling Jesus that he can't suffer and die. And then Jesus comes out with an amazingly severe rebuke to Peter. He says, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. So Peter really, really got it wrong. You know, the previous little section, he's hearing from God that Jesus is the Messiah. And then when he's telling Jesus that he shouldn't suffer and die, that's Satan talking through Peter. Now, that is a very difficult concept, so we're not going to talk about that today. But just note that Peter really, really got it right and then really, really got it wrong. And just note, I mean, it's not really in passing because this is almost the point of this little section. The concerns of God that Jesus is talking about are his suffering and death and resurrection. That is what God is concerned about, that Peter was trying to prevent. So Jesus' death and resurrection, that is what God was focused on, what Jesus was interested in. So we've got Peter here who has been, you know, he's got it right, and Jesus has promised that he will build his church through Peter. And now here, Peter is being rebuked severely for getting in the way of God's plan. So how does that fit with building the church? I mean, Peter, who's, you know, so right and yet so wrong, is can Jesus use somebody who is so unstable and inconsistent? You'd wonder. And if you think Peter has got it wrong here, which he very definitely has, it actually gets worse. So the next little bit we're going to look at, and this is very famous, this story, so you know, you're probably familiar with it. So Jesus then predicts the following: "This very night you will fall away on account of me, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." Peter replied, "Even if all fall away on your account, I never will. Truly I say to you," Jesus answered, "this very night, before the cock crows, you will disown me three times." But Peter declared, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the other disciples said the same. So here we have it. Even if everybody else falls away, I won't. Now, that's a kind of a foolish thing to say, but it, you know, it shows Peter's enthusiasm at the very least, you know, and his commitment. And does he get it right? Well, you kind of know the end of the story here, I suspect. But in response to that strong statement of commitment, Jesus says, "Well, don't think so far. Don't speak so quickly. This very night, you know, within a few hours, before the cock crows, you will disown me three times." And just remember the timing of this. This is just before the crucifixion. Jesus is about to suffer everything. And he knows that Peter is going to fail. And yet he doesn't fire him at this point. He's still patient. And Peter continues with his foot in his mouth. "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." You know, really, really strong statements of commitment. And we know that he fails. So shortly after that prediction that Peter is going to fail, he really does fail. So here we have it. Peter's in the courtyard, and one of the servant girls comes to him and says, "You were also with Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus of Galilee." But he denied it before them all. "I don't know what you're talking about." Then he goes out to the gateway, where another servant girl is there, and said to the people, "This fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth." He denied it again with an oath this time, so he's getting a bit more agitated. "I don't even know the man." After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, "Surely you're one of them. Your accent gives you away." And then he began to call down curses and swore to them, "I don't know the man." This is, you know, within hours of Jesus saying, "You're all going to be scattered. You will disown me." And Peter says, "I will not. I will die rather than disown you." And then, within hours, he disowns. Now, that's a pretty stark contrast of commitment followed by denial. And, you know, I'm guessing that hasn't happened to any of us. But we all have times in our lives when we say we're committed to following Christ. And then, you know, the evidence a week, a month, a year later is maybe we're not. We haven't explicitly sworn at people and to people that we don't know Jesus, probably. But our lives suggest we don't know him, we haven't met him. So just bear that in mind, that although this is a really extreme case of commitment followed by explicit sworn denial, and that's not likely to happen, or not likely to have happened to many of us, commitment followed by apparent denial is probably happened to all of us sometime. So immediately after Peter denies the third time, the cock crows, and then he remembers the word Jesus has spoken. "Before the cock crows, you will disown me." And he goes outside and weeps bitterly. So, you know, how bad can it get for Peter? He's come out with these amazing statements of commitment and then absolutely failed monstrously. You know, he can't even say to a servant girl that he knew Jesus. And then he swears and, you know, vehemently swears, calls down oaths and swore to them, "I don't know the man." How bad can it get for Peter? Now, that is a monstrous failure. And remember, you know, Peter is a big blustery fisherman. He's, you know, he's the first to do everything. And then he goes out and weeps bitterly. So that tells you something about the shame that he felt for that failure. Okay, and shame and failure, they go together. Now, we might not fail like Peter, but there are other things where we do fail, and we undoubtedly feel shame. So these are pretty somber verses, a catalogue of failure by Peter. And, you know, in many ways, Peter is us. Okay, the precise detail is different, clearly different. But actually, the things Peter fouls up, not understanding, opening his mouth when he shouldn't, being committed and then not, you know, that's us. So, should Peter have been fired for these failures? Lots of mistakes, and I've only picked out a handful, there are more. And just as an aside, if you were making up the Bible and trying to pretend that it was all a lovely story, you wouldn't have one of the main characters of the Bible being such a mess up. Okay, so the fact that this is recorded and Peter's failure, the denial, is in all four Gospels. If you were making this up, you wouldn't put that in. You know, the autobiography of, pick a famous politician, Donald Trump, you know, if he was writing his autobiography, he would not put in the times when he might have made a mistake. You just don't do that. So if the Bible was fake, it wouldn't have this, you know, filthy portrait of Peter with all his failures. You wouldn't put that in. So that gives us confidence that the Gospels are accurate. So that's an aside, but pretty important. So, you know, this man Peter, he's messed up big time. How does Jesus treat him? And the key actually is in the verses we've already read, where Jesus is teaching about his death. You know, he's going to suffer, he's going to be killed, he's going to rise from the dead. So Jesus' death and resurrection is the key to how Peter is treated. He's not rejected because of his failure. Jesus came to save Peter and us. Okay? So let's continue with Peter's journey. So not many verses or days later, this is the denial is just before the crucifixion. So a couple of days later, on the resurrection morning, the women are at the tomb and they meet some angels. And they say to him, don't be alarmed. He, the angel said, you are looking for Jesus of Nazarene who was crucified. He has risen. He's not here. See the place where they laid him. So like the angels speak in really short sentences, easy to understand. He's not here. See where he was. But go, tell his disciples and Peter. He's going ahead of you into Galilee. You will see him there just as he told you. So the angel explicitly says, tell the disciples, i.e. the ones who are still on board and haven't fouled up quite as much as Peter, tell them and Peter. So it's really clear that God, through the angel, wanted to make sure Peter knew that he was not excluded because of his failure. Tell the disciples and Peter, go to Galilee, I'll see you there. So that little phrase, and Peter, you know, that's really meaningful because, you know, if that was a human scenario and you've had a big fight with a relative and you're told, go there and annoying relative, you know, peace is made. So the angel, speaking for God, says, make sure Peter goes. And we haven't got time to go through how Jesus meets Peter on the seashore in Galilee. But he says, there's quite a long dialogue, Jesus and Peter on the seashore. And Jesus again gives Peter a really comforting command, you know, feed my sheep. Now, if Peter was a waster and was going to be fired, Jesus wouldn't be trusting him with feeding the sheep, you know, his flock of disciples. And then at the end he says, follow me. So Jesus is restoring Peter, even though he has made such a big foul up by denying Jesus three times. So really beautiful tenderness in the way Jesus speaks to Peter. You know, so God, through the angel, says, make sure Peter knows. Very tender dialogue between Jesus and Peter on the seashore. So back to the apprentice. So on the video I showed you, Alan Sugar says, I wouldn't trust you with a hotel in Monopoly. Jesus says to Peter, I will give you the keys of the kingdom. I'm entrusting you with something really precious here, rather more than a Monopoly hotel. You're not cut out to be my business partner. No. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Would you rather be a business partner with, I don't know, anyone, Alan Sugar, or would you rather be a child of God? Seems like there's rather a difference there. Better to be a child of God than a business partner. Better than, you know, all the wealth in the world, or be a child of God. Much, much better. You've not proved yourself to me. That was in the video. Okay, well, if we're in, you know, any kind of setting where we have to prove ourselves, there's always a risk that we're not quite going to measure up. Might just miss the mark, but you fail. You know, you don't prove yourself. Well, actually, with God, we don't need to prove ourselves anyway. We can't. You know, the stuff I said at the beginning, we come to God with empty hands. There's nothing of value in that sense that we can bring to God. He's not going to be impressed by anything we do. So we can't prove our value or ourselves to God. And in fact, he demonstrates his love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That's the opposite of proving yourself. It's while I was still a sinner, rebelling, angry, dead in sin. It's under those conditions that Christ died for us. The opposite of proving yourself to make yourself attractive or valuable or important. And then I have to envisage these people in business with me. Okay, so that's a sensible thing. You know, you want to consider carefully who you go into partnership with, in business or friendship or whatever, on your team. You do want to think about that. You know, are we qualified on our own to be in God's team? Not a chance. Not a chance we're qualified. But Jesus talking about the church, to present her to himself, her, the church, as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. So it's not as if we're not going into business with God. It's not some sort of deal that we somehow make ourselves qualified. No. He, by his grace, makes us spotless, part of the church who will be, as it says here, which is from in the Bible, without wrinkle, stain, or blemish, holy and blameless. That's what we are. The church will be presented to Christ in that form. And if you wondered what happens to Peter, a few verses later in early Acts, Peter stands up with the 11, raises his voice to the crowd and says, fellow Jews and all of you who live in Jerusalem, let me explain this to you. Listen carefully to what I say. And then he goes on to explain about the resurrection. So this is Peter, who couldn't even admit to a servant girl in the dark that he knew Jesus. He's preaching to a crowd of thousands. I mean, many thousands, because 3,000 were converted that day. So it's a bigger crowd. So he's preaching to thousands, and yet he wouldn't admit to knowing Jesus, you know, a few weeks earlier. And that is proof of Jesus' transforming grace in Peter's life. The failure, Peter, actually now, is instrumental in building the church. So we need to remember that Peter's Saviour is our Saviour. So although Peter failed, you know, we see a smidgen of that. Surprise, surprise, so do we, so do I. So in all of this, Jesus was extremely gracious and patient. And he restored Peter. Remember the "and Peter" phrase. So he was patient then with Peter, and he still is with us. Jesus died to save Peter, literally. And me. And Jesus uses broken failures, failures in quotes, because to say someone is a failure is not accurate. But he uses failures, quotes, like Peter, like me, like you. So whatever you've done, or actually not done, there is hope. So throughout the Bible, and you know, in these examples in Peter's life, we see Jesus taking something which is weak and broken, and you know, someone who fails, and he uses them.